and welcome to our Good Place podcast that is run by Good Place Innovators, a team of researchers, educators and student fellows passionate about transforming communities with an extra sensitive eye for our place, local context and true community needs. Our project focuses on the notion of entrepreneurial embeddedness, the emotional connection to our place and co-creation of value with our communities. We hope to contribute to entrepreneurial learning, making the place-based pedagogy a central point for the growth of future entrepreneurs and innovators. My name is Radka Newton. I'm a senior teaching fellow in strategy and innovation at Lancaster University Management School. I'm also an education service designer and a lead of Good Place Innovators project funded by the Enterprise Educators UK. In this podcast, we have inspired educators to incorporate place-based pedagogy to their curriculum. We debated the notion of co-design with our communities in order to create better entrepreneurial solutions. And today, we welcome our local entrepreneur, Jane Dalton, who describes herself as a creative thinker with a strategic approach. Jane set up her own independent agency, Groundswell Innovation, almost 15 years ago. Jane is also a member of Lancashire Labs Innovation Board, and she sits on the Dean's Council of the Management School. Jane, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you very much. Great to be invited to be a part of the discussion.
Jane, you are such an inspirational entrepreneur and innovator as well. And please, can you share with us your personal definition of innovation?
Yeah, for me, it's I suppose we talk about it as an agency about doing different things, you know, developing new products and services, but also doing things differently. So it's about the how of innovation and all to the ends of creating value. So, you know, we're about putting cash in the bank from new ideas for a lot of clients, for example. But I think return on investment is something which is obviously defined by each client team that we work with and often has as much to do with social value as it does to do with pounds, shillings and pence.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we always debate what is innovation. It's just really great to hear it from you. And you've been in business since 2008. And I was sort of looking, how you sort of talk about the business and where you are located, if you don't mind me quoting. You say, so was 2008 a good time to start a business? Indeed. Is there ever a good time to innovate? Well, let's say we are big believers in not waiting for the rain to stop. After all, we are based in the north of England. So is the northwest stuff meaningful for you and for your business?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the weather's not panning out in line with that, is it? No rain today, which is very nice. It's not grim up north at all. But I'm deliberately based here with the business because, well, all sorts of reasons, really. But I think for me, having been down south a long time, being, you know, lived in all sorts of different places, I wanted to be back where I felt I had the quality of life that Lancashire gives, born and raised here. But also once I started to reflect on what that meant to me and why I wanted to be back here, so obviously it'd be easier to be in home counties, for example. It was to do with this kind of combination of creative elements of innovation that I got from being here and to do with elements of frugal innovation as well, which was, you know, is very much in vogue at the moment. But, you know, to me in rural Lancashire, that was about bits of baler twine and what you could make with them. Or it was about, you know, what you were going to put into the local art competition and the fetes that were happening every summer. And it was what people did, make stuff all the time out of what you had available. So that creativity was embedded in my upbringing very much. So it just felt like a really great step forward to come back here and to be part of building on that brilliant basis, but also to be part of that kind of, there's lots of different definitions of life success here in a way that perhaps there isn't in the south of England. It's not just about the money. So that really appealed to me.
And we can see your commitment to the region as well, you know, also in your sort of volunteering position as an ambassador of for Northern Power Women. And I just wonder, what does this mean and how does it contribute to what you do? What do you get out of it?
Huge amounts. when we're listening in to kind of the podcast series that they run and the talks that they run in person, there's always inspiration from the people who are talking. But also when you're acting as a mentor for the next generation coming through, the ideas are brilliant. And it's just great to get that sort of grounding in the realities of how people are thinking at the moment and what obstacles they see to innovation, entrepreneurship, all sorts of different things. But that for us is really the core of what we're doing is trying to get diversity and real inclusion of a broad range of ideas. So the whole point of, for example, Groundswell is the logo is a pair of glasses because we're wanting people to reframe, you know, and get new perspectives on old problems. And you have to be looking from a different perspective. So if we just talk to people like us all the time, then we'd only get a very narrow perspective on what innovation should be. So we have some heated debates at those sessions, but that's part of the process for me.
And that really underpins that sort of open innovation as we talk about it in academia. So absolutely, this is what you do in practice, don't you?
Yeah. And it's kind of, one of my colleagues describes it as sort of white noise. You've got to be constantly listening out for what's happening around you and challenging your own assumptions, really, about, well, I think that and I think that's the right way to go, but am I missing something? And what would this person think or, you know, this group? So, yeah, just never quite being sure of yourself and of the right answer, I think, is a really good starting place for innovation.
It requires quite a lot of open-mindedness and, I suppose, you know, being able to be curious the time.
Well, in fact, I just talked about that this week, actually, the whole concept of curiosity. One of the biggest blockers we see to innovation is a closed mentality, actually. And we've been doing this 30 years and therefore we know the way to do it is X. And don't come and tell me about what other people are doing because that's not an SME in my position, so it's not relevant. You know, all of these phrases that we've heard time and time again, it is a really good signal that it's not worth having that conversation sometimes with some groups. But in other places, you know, when people are asking questions and being part of that debate, then you know you're onto something.
And, you know, your company is also a Northern Powerhouse partner, mm-hmm. With this sort of commitment to support the innovation. And the former Northern Powerhouse minister, he sort of praised you, you know, with coming with this experience, being a really strong creative partner. Do you think we're innovative enough then up here, up north?
Yeah, and I think we definitely are. I think we're probably too humble with some of the ideas and we don't necessarily talk about them. I'm not sure we're as good as we could be on moving from idea to, say, value proposition. Something which is commercially viable that really takes advantage of all the opportunities in the marketplace, to really think that through. And there can be a rush to market, for example, with, well, we've got this thing and we're going to tell people about it and that will be fine and we'll have this massive market. And then when you start to say, well, it's brilliant that you've solved that engineering problem or that scientific problem, but what's in it for me if I'm X, Y, Z customer group or community group, you know, depending on the context. So I feel that innovation is a really brilliant way for us to attack the productivity gap, for example, and to really deliver on levelling up in a way that government funding cannot hope to do, particularly as that dwindles. So, you know, this concept of scaling deep into a community with enterprise, it's something we've perhaps discussed offline, rather than everybody seeking to be an entrepreneur who is building a unicorn company. If we can have a selection of companies who are, yes, working for profit, but also for the public good, then we build ecosystems and we build sustainable economies. That is something which I feel has real potential for the North.
Mm. And that's what we talk about a lot in this podcast, actually. So we talk about this stuff, notion of co-design with the communities or participatory design, including the communities in what we do as entrepreneurs. And we're learning probably in entrepreneurship more from the architects and the designers who've been doing it probably longer than we have.
Oh, design thinking. Yeah. I mean, it's the best way forward, isn't it? I mean, you know, some recent projects we've been working on to do with place-based design and innovation. It really is that sense of outcomes it's not, you know, traditionally, I think stakeholder engagement has meant, well, we're going to ask five questions about what paint colour to use or what particular potholes to fill in. Yes, that has to be done, but that's nothing to do with place-based innovation, in my view. It's just sort of ticking a box. So I think where you can have a proper conversation with people, it's as basic as, you know, where are they on Maslow's hierarchy of needs? Are we right at the bottom? Do we need some community spaces? Do we need green space? Do we need some pride in a local area? So people picking up after themselves with rubbish and things like that. Then you get to understand where the money should be going and some of the simple quick wins, actually. You know, everybody does win in that instance because there can be some cheap ideas people can get involved in, and you start to see, you know, it's why we call groundswell, that groundswell of support around particular ideas in a place that then builds its own momentum, and then it starts to go from there. So you can make a small amount of funding go quite a long way.
And so, you know, in your work, in your stuff, day-to-day work, you probably have quite a lot of examples of some stuff good, maybe even bad innovation, but I'm curious about more that stuff, that responsible innovation that maybe you've worked on that really changed that place. Can you share with us maybe an example?
Yeah, what I saw as a really great innovation from government actually was with the advent of Towns Fund pots of cash. So it's about 20 million per section that are given to a particular place. We worked on two of these in Crewe and in Preston, that there's been a real keen eye for, okay, well, how are you engaging with the local community? That's part of the criteria for getting the money. So you can't shy away from it. You have to do the due diligence on exactly what that means. So, but it, you know, what I'll describe as wins for the community might not sound, you know, we're not talking about inventing AI here. We're talking about delivering what people really need. So, for example, in Crewe, one of the projects pitched was for an old building to be renovated so that they've got community space. But if you're thinking about trying to get a sense of belonging in a place, that's hugely important for people because community centres don't have funding. You know, it was during COVID we were working on that particular project, so you can imagine how little sense of community was happening after the first wave of being very nice to each other. But it's also gone on things like green space provision for people who are living in multi-occupancy properties, for example. Where on earth do they take their children outside? You know, where do they get some exercise? Have we got walkways around a city or a town that connect you usefully to places they want to go, which are safe spaces that people want to walk in? So there's some really practical things that can be implemented, I think, is real responsible innovation, rather than we're going to put up a new building and everybody's going to be very excited about what we're using that for. Well, yeah, that's great. But if you don't have those base building blocks in place, that's not going to be very useful. And the other example in Preston, which I'm really excited about and we hope to be able to achieve, is it's not so much the what will go up, but the how they're going to do it. So the rich cultural history of Preston is something we're starting to see come out with, like, the, you know, the brilliant Wallace and Gromit sculpture by the market. It's fantastic. But we're going to build on that with, you know, you can't have Labina Himid based in Preston and not do something about a broader rich cultural heritage. So by simple things like light projections and surface design on the, you know, the outside of buildings and flagstones, that kind of thing, we're hoping to do something which reflects that history and tells some of those really beautiful stories around the place. Yeah. So, you know, that's going to stand the test of time, and it's going to tell the next generation about the real rich history they've got there. That's something that I'm very proud to have as part of our legacy. Yeah.
It's lovely just listening to you, because many people imagine innovation as some big high-tech digital, you know, something outstanding, something we can't imagine, but yeah, really talking about it as a real thing, something that touches all of us, all citizens.
Well, we make it unattainable if we make it the big project. And my view has always been that innovation is not a separate department. It's a mindset, and it should be something that everybody has access to and is given license to try at. You know, we see a lot of people, particularly in SMEs, I think it's very difficult for business owners to get their heads around what innovation looks like. So there's waste, there's play, there's risk. And those are all the things that they've enabled themselves to do as owners of the business when they started up, but they don't necessarily extend that license to their employees. So part of what we do in terms of trying to build that creative culture, for example, is to try and remove some of those blockers and try and have those conversations and try and get people to see that the things that they do in their downtime, whether that's baking a cake or knitting or crochet or houseplants, it doesn't matter. It's a creative endeavour that they can, it's a skill set they just need to bring back into the workplace. Mm.
Do you know, I went to Norway 1 year to a conference and the attendees, the Norwegians, they were knitting.
In
the conference, and I was looking around thinking, oh wow. And for them, I think it's just stuff, a bit of a more normal way of working. So they've considered it quite accepting. And for us, it's a bit shocking, isn't it? But like you said, you know, these creative things that we bring from our lives, we are humans, we bring the whole human into the workplace.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of talk about authenticity in the workplace, but do we really mean it? You know, and I think the, you know, travel expands the mind, you know, all of those experiences of seeing how other people do it. If you've got then the confidence to start doing things, you know, like that and pulling them back into our culture and our business cultures, I think that would be hugely rewarding.
Is it more challenging, I suppose, for SMEs, you know, for smaller businesses where they don't have these structures properly in place? They probably don't even have a marketing person. They are all doing everything together. And for them to think, you know, maybe out of the box or more creatively.
Yeah, I think it can feel like that, but they're also more nimble. So we talk about innovation working better on ice. So you've got your IQ, which is your structures. You've got your CQ, which is, you know, creative due diligence, and then EQ, bringing people with you. Well, it doesn't matter how simple your processes are, some kind of process, whether it's a suggestions box on the front desk, you know, it doesn't have to be complicated. We just run a peer network kind of process on exactly that basis of, you know, if you're a cafe or if you're supplying into an OEM, you can do innovation. You just have to fit it to your, you know, construct of the business. So, yeah, I think the mental challenge is the biggest thing. It's like, oh, no, we couldn't possibly do that because we're too small. But why would you start a business if you weren't an innovator? Mm.
Jane, I'm totally getting the name of your company now. I feel so grounded.
Here you go, you see. It's all very practical.
Well, you know, in the last podcast with another local entrepreneur, we spent some time sort of pondering what it would be like to do a job swap. So your task, Jane, if we were going to do this, is to redesign our curriculum of our entrepreneurial program and reflect that sort of local agenda a little bit better. How would you go about it, or what would you bring to our students that maybe we don't have at the moment?
Well, I'd make this book in front of me required reading. So this is by Klaus Schwab and it's called Stakeholder Capitalism. And I was shocked because this only came out last year. But by the time I got to page, where is it? Page 14, something like that. It talks about a manifesto that was delivered at Davos in 1973. The stakeholder model requires businesses to think beyond their direct primary interests and to include the concerns of employees and their communities in their decision making. Shock, horror. The management has to serve society. You know, these are not concepts that you would think of as 50 years old necessarily, but that would be the manifesto that I'd want to deliver to the students and say, right, what do you do with that? How do you really serve a community and do something which is going to have sustained economic value, but also community value?
Well, that's going on my reading list.
Perfect.
And we have to co-deliver together. So that's fantastic. And you are right. This is the 70s, isn't it? It's quite surprising. And yet we talk about this responsible leadership as if it was something newly invented.
Absolutely right. Yeah, history has a lot to teach us.
Well, Jane, thank you so much. We are coming to the end of the podcast and there is just so much more we could speak about. But I just wanted to ask you one more question. What is your place? Where do you feel placed and happy?
Well, I have to say Lancaster, and that as part of Lancashire. That's why I'm on the Innovation Board here, why I'm passionate about doing as much as possible. But, you know, there's also a lot of talk about this kind of 20-minute city and 20-minute community, having everything on your doorstep. Don't need to invent it here because it's already in Lancaster, isn't it? Let's face it. So I'm just busy enjoying the benefits of that and not telling anybody and being really smug that I'm not living in the South.
Oh, thank you so much, Jane. Thank you for your time. It's been great having you with us. Thank you for inspiring our students to be creative, open-minded, curious, committed to their place of business. And yeah, that's all for today. Thank you for the debate. And feel free to drop us a message, comment or recommendation of a resource, initiative or idea for our project. And until next time, take care.